The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
The little girl didn't come up to me. There was a yellow puddle underneath her chair. She had wet herself. So I went over and I asked if she was okay. And she said, "That's me. That's me in the show." We got help for her, but it was shocking because really my whole purpose of doing the show was to prevent it from happening. And honestly, at that time, I really didn't think that kids would come forward. That never even entered my mind.
It's a wonderful chaos, beautifully random, messy and glorious,
solo or tandem.
We work to find rest, we fight to find peace, both head and the heart,
like a nephew and niece.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful
we're here. We're here. We're, as Bambos and I were discussing before we went live, this has not been the lightest week of topics for us. Like each week, we brought on a lot of World War II surviving grandkids.
Yeah.
And Regina also has an experience of similar with her grandparents. So, and this just happened. It was, you know, there was no planning on this one. We could have called it World War II Remembrance Week. So we have Regina Marscheider.
Marscheider.
I met Regina many years ago and she told me a story. It blew my mind. My whole body shrunk from the experience I was having. She brings puppets into school and she does puppet shows which expose kids who are being sexually abused. And then she has a whole system around that to help get those kids to safety. And we're going to discuss all of that, and I'm sure a whole lot more on
A Wonderful Chaos.
Oh, we love reminiscing about our early days of doing podcasts doing.
Since we started the editing, both me and Andy have been listening to the podcast.
Yeah, we're listening back, just seeing what we've learned in the meantime.
Yeah.
Sometimes we thought we were on mute and we kept talking, only to discover later when we watched on YouTube that we were being listened to. How are you today?
I'm here.
Yeah.
I didn't want to come.
No.
Yeah. And it's fucking great.
And are you tired in general, or is it hard for you to go through these harder subjects, or what's the feeling for you?
Well, what I experience when someone is talking about whatever heavy journey that they've embodied in their life,
mm-hmm.
I find it difficult to not take it in.
Yeah.
But I have to say I slept really good. Normally I wouldn't sleep good after yesterday's episode.
Yeah, because we discussed that one time when someone sort of shared a heavy duty story and you went to the park and you threw up just to purge out the emotions that came up for you.
Yeah.
We can discuss that a bit later because I do know at some point when I go into very intense emotions, I'll still do that purge. But in general, when I'm with someone sharing a difficult experience, I've found in the meantime, when I connect to my own pain, then I'm not really, I'm not embodying their pain. I'm just sitting with my own.
Mm.
So while Regina speaks and shares potentially, you know, hard stories or difficult things, then I don't imagine her story. I feel into my own pain and allow that just to be okay. So that at least something that we can maybe discuss how that looks for you in the future.
No, this is a good starting point.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it's not like your life was really pretty. Let's get that clear. When I think of your life, I could purge. We haven't gone to half of the stories. Half of the stories I won't even tell on air because I don't even feel comfortable talking about them. Regina, So I met Regina on the Last Letter tour. I went to John Kohler Books, who did the publishing for both of my books.
Yeah.
He also did the publishing for Regina and her book, Simon Says. And we all sat together. And what I found was that there was this beautiful moment when I'm sitting at the table and everyone I'm with is an author sharing their story of healing. So I said, write a letter to someone in your life. And in case of Regina, I said, write the person's hardest for you to write. That was the question I said, because she said, I don't know who I'd write to. But each person shared that they had to overcome some struggle in order to give that back and give their life meaning. And in that, I began very clearly to feel, wow, I see this theme of the wounded healer really clearly now. You see it clearest when you're around five people who've all had massive suffering, and then they share that suffering in order to help heal themselves and others. So in that moment, I think the title for the book solidified for me. It was like, wow, that's clear. But the thing that, just to read a little bit, because Regina has done so much here. She's the owner and director of Spectrum Puppets. She's been producing, directing, and designing world-class puppets for 40 years with a performance history that includes appearances on The Today Show, The Tonight Show, and feature segments on Beyond the Dream on Fox News. She's a master puppeteer, and in 1986, she took on the call to do something that I think and I find to be outrageous. Like, where you'd have the balls to say, I'm going to make a puppet show to try to expose sexual abuse, it's beyond me. I mean, I get scared just at the thought that I'd be in a situation where once it's exposed, now I have to do something about it. So what I'd love to discuss with her is basically how she came to it. And there's 20 things that I see could go wrong in that whole dynamic. All of them, and you can't see because I've got to, but I get just goosebumps each time I think about everything that could happen in a session. It's wild. So I've wanted to bring her on for some time. She wasn't able to make the last show because of an internet issue. And we welcome her because she's got a lot of things going on in her own personal life at the moment. And she still agreed to be with us. So I'm really grateful.
Do you know who she reminds me of?
I would guess, hold on one second, Kelly McCabe?
No,
who's that?
Joanne Levasseur.
Oh, wow. Strong.
Yeah.
Nice.
She has that energy.
Yeah. Strong, powerful.
And grounded.
And loved. Yeah, I got it. Well, let's bring her on. Yeah. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, guys. It's good to see you.
It's great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. You know, I hear people and what they do and their work and the kind of activities they take on. And I have to sometimes say I'm a bit numb to it because you hear so many nice stories. You think, oh, that's sweet. That's nice. And I'm happy they're giving their life a purpose. But when I heard your story, I wanted to run for the exits. I was like, what the fuck?
You wanted to run for the exits and you bring on the show?
Yeah, because who in their life is going to welcome in that much? Because I always look at my life as how much tension can I hold? And I can only hold so much tension at any given moment because there's like a depth of peace you need to be able to find inside of yourself. So when you were telling me what you were inviting as the potential, right? It was really overwhelming for me. I think I called three different people to say, hey, this woman is doing this and you have to hear about it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy, but I love what I do. You know, 40 years later, I get up in the morning. I can't wait to get to work. I love it. You know, I've been a puppet for 40 years and build all my own puppets downstairs in my crazy studio here. I have over 300 marionettes that are all handcrafted. And I love marionettes because you're using the whole body. Yeah, I love marionettes.
Okay, so yeah, marionette would be, how would you distinguish a marionette from a puppet?
Marionettes are puppets on strings, and there's the control which has all these strings that manipulate the puppet.
What is your relationship to sexual abuse or abuse in your own life?
Like I said, I've been doing puppets forever. And then one day I was hired to do a series of shows and workshops at a Montessori school. And when I went in there, you know, I had just gotten done doing some shows for the Norfolk City public schools on nutrition. And, you know, I've done a lot of things with puppets that were educational. So the teacher, she said that she had two children in her class that she thought were being abused. And did I ever do anything, you know, about that subject? So I said, no, but I'll look into it. So I went and met with a sexual trauma unit in Virginia Beach. It was two detectives and a gal from social services. And that started my journey and 2 years of research and development. So I went all over the country. I spoke to law enforcement, clergy, educators. I went to prisons and talked to child molesters, which at that time they weren't putting them in prison very much. And then I went to a group called Parents United, which is like AA for pedophiles. So then I started building the show. And the show basically is about two children, Lori and Doug. Mom has been divorced for a while. Her boyfriend is coming over, Martin. And she said, I think he's going to ask me to marry him tonight. And won't that be wonderful for our family? And Dougie is thrilled because, you know, Martin gives him Xbox and takes him to ball games. Lori, not so much. So, you know, throughout the show, we see how Lori is discouraged with Mom and her marrying Martin. And finally, Simon comes in and, you know, they sing a song together. This is my body. That's your body. Leave my body alone. And there are several songs that the kids sing along with, but most of the children sing with that song. And then he ultimately tells her to write a letter to her mother, which she does. And then Mom reads the letter just as the doorbell rings, and it's Martin. And of course she answers and she says, Martin, read this. And she said, the next door that's doorbell you're going to hear is from the police. So the kids from the very first moment the show starts are engaged. And I think, first of all, it's a marionette show. Most of them have never seen a marionette show. The music is all original. The songs are original. And then they're very anxious to see what's going to happen to Lori, you know. So Simon tells Lori how to tell, who to tell, if somebody doesn't listen, you know, to keep on telling. So it's entertainment. It's an arts and entertainment, you know, performance. It's marvelous. And I had to stop after the first show we did, and it took me like 3 or 4 months to get back on the road because a child came forward at the very first show, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do now? So now every time we do the show, we have somebody either from law enforcement or Child Protective Services with us. So any child that comes forward is immediately evaluated. And in many cases, within 48 hours, an arrest is made. So it really works. And I know that people have asked, well, how many false reports have you had?
Yeah.
None. And this is why I started doing the show. And then about 4 years ago, Fox News came down and did an interview on me here at my studio for the Beyond the Dream sequence. The reporter got me to admit that I had been a victim of sexual abuse. So now, you know, here for 30 years, I've been giving children the courage and the tools to tell, and I never was able to tell myself.
So I want to go back to the first time that child, after you did the first show, came to you and you now had someone say, hey, I've got a similar situation or whatever, however they explained it to you. Can you walk me back through how that process looked? Because it's the first time it's happened. It must be insane to have that feeling.
It was insane. And the little girl didn't come up to me. There was a yellow puddle underneath her chair. She had wet herself. So I went over and I asked if she was okay. And she said, that's me. That's me in the show. So, you know, I mean, like all the blood ran out of my head, and I immediately got the counselor. And so we got help for her, but it was shocking because really my whole purpose of doing the show was to prevent it from happening. And honestly, at that time, I really didn't think that kids would come forward. That never even entered my mind. So I'm like, thank God that it was on the very first show so that I wouldn't be going around and not be prepared for when it does happen again. It happened many, many times. I think since I started this, I probably performed for more than a million children. And I'm sure tens of thousands have prevented the abuse. And just in our little area here in Hampton Roads, we helped put over 200 child molesters in prison. So I didn't have that when I was a child. There was no therapy, you know. So I just lived with it. And the ramifications that go along with sexual abuse are horrible. You know, it's a life sentence. And do you ever get over it? No, but you learn to live with it and to control it. When I met you that time and, you know, we talked about the last letter, I wrote a letter to my child abuser and I forgave him for what he did. Yeah. You have no idea how much you meant to me that day because I was able to do that. And that's really important because that was negative energy that I was carrying with me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
You know, by the way, you may not be aware of it, but my new book came out up 2 weeks ago. And in the book, because I did my last letter with you and then you shared that story then inspired me to write a letter to the mom, the woman that killed my mom. And
wow. Yeah, I did see it. I haven't gotten the book yet, but I will. And I will read it.
For me, your story was one of the... You know, I did 60 of those sessions. So when I had you sharing the level of going to a place that for me was unimaginable, it wasn't all that dissimilar from you going and having the child pee with a puddle.
Yeah.
Right. I'd say to you, I mean, I remember your face when I said, okay, you said, I don't know who to write to. And I looked at you and I said, well, just think about the person that's hardest for you to write and try that. And then I just saw you go pale white and start tears for me.
Yeah,
and I thought, God.
And actually, I went home and I rewrote that letter because I put a lot of details in there about how he really affected my life. Yeah. You know, the trust issues and the shame and the guilt. And I mean, it's amazing. So I ended up writing a 5-page letter and then I burned it, you know, in the fireplace because, you know, I got it out and now it's gone.
Yeah.
Kind of cool thing happened. Right after I was on Fox News. My husband and I never talked about it either after we got married. And we're married almost 53 years. Oh my God, am I that old? Yeah. he's my husband's a saint because I could never, ever have done this without him. He built all my marionette controls, the racks that they hang on, the bodies, the moving eyes, the moving mouths. He did all of that. Always with a good attitude and always being helpful. But we never really talked about my particular abuse. So we did the show for Fox News, and the guy said, oh, it's probably not going to air for another 10 days to 2 weeks. And I'm like, okay, that'll give me a chance to talk to Ed about what I did and what I said on national TV. You know, that I was a victim of abuse. Sorry, my earbud flew out. And so that was on a Thursday. Friday, these two ladies, two friends of mine who were also abused, one of them always wanted to see Oprah's Live Your Best Life. So we took off and went to Washington to the Verizon Center. And we're sitting among 6,000 people. And my phone vibrates. And it's Kelly from Fox News. And he said, Your piece was so intriguing. It's going to air today at 1 o'clock. So I had a little bit of a meltdown right there in the Verizon Center because I'm like, oh my God, what if Ed sees it? What is he going to say? And I was worried about it, which I shouldn't have been because, you know, he loves me and he would never be upset about that. But being a victim, you know, that's how you feel. So we come home on Sunday. And first thing I did was I went inside and I'm like, Ed, did you watch Fox News yesterday? And he said, no, why? And I told him what I did. He said, well, let's watch it together. So we did. And he looks at me, puts his arm around me. He said, honey, God just opened the door for you to walk through and save millions of souls. First time since my abuse, total freedom.
Yeah.
Total freedom. So I'd go to get groceries. The cashier would say, oh, I saw you on, you know, on Fox News. And they would tell me their stories. Yeah. And then a couple of weeks later, I was a keynote speaker at a convention, a national convention in Columbus, Ohio, and did the show, told my story for the very first time. And afterwards, there were close to 100 women who were waiting online to talk to me. I spent 4.5 hours talking to every single one. And guys, 80% of those women had never told a soul.
Yeah.
Thank you, Regina. Thanks for being with us and sharing this.
Yeah, definitely.
My curiosity goes to when you're with children. What are the ways that it's being communicated? Are there like telltale signs that you pick up on?
You can see they'll be rocking back and forth. They'll pull their shirt up, you know, over their face. So there are signs. There really are. But, you know, the kids come forward either to me or to the safety net professionals that we have there. And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the stats, but 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 5 boys will be sexually abused before the age of 18. 90% know their abuser. So people think stranger danger. Danger is right in your house. And that's something that really concerns me right now, because think about how many children are being sequestered with their abuser. So, and because of the, you know, COVID-19, we can't take our shows into the schools right now anymore. So we're having a big fundraiser next month to raise the money so that we can film the show and then send that out to kids everywhere. And then we're putting together a whole bunch of virtual videos as well. And of course, my book, Simon Says Play It Safe.
Yeah, that's great.
And this is a book that gives parents the language to talk to their children about safety and sensitive issues. What's amazing is that according to the Child Molestation Research and Prevention Institute, 95% of sexual abuse is preventable. So that's why I'm so gung-ho about getting this information to kids. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what I found fascinating in doing the work of coaching and mentoring and doing basically just personal development work, unless you do that work, you don't necessarily come in contact with people around the most intimate parts of their life. And the one thing that shocked me as I was doing this work and we were really uncovering and digging into the most sensitive parts of people's lives was the amount of sexual abuse. And of course, you talk about those percentages. Well, those percentages are bigger in my life because the people I'm interacting with are already trying to overcome the pain of a lot of the trauma they've experienced. I'm, you know, I'm often feeling like, wow, it feels like every other person that I'm working with has had some sexual abuse in their past.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize what a massive issue it is.
I agree.
I really don't. So I think, you know, that my work is really important. I wish I could give every child the Simon doll. And, you know, even grown-ups who I've worked with. I just did a podcast, and a woman came forward right on the show for the very first time. She said, I heard your story. And she said, I felt like I could talk to you and tell you what happened to me. So she's telling us right there. And I said, give me a call, you know, when this is over. And, you know, she came over. We talked for a couple of hours. And she was suicidal that morning, said she was going to end it all. And I said, you did, just not your life. You just ended the crisis you're in. So I got her right in with a therapist. And, you know, so it's not just children I'm working with. I'm working with grown-ups, too.
When you made peace with such a dramatic part of your past, you become the lighthouse for those who haven't yet done that. Allowing myself to share the depth of the pain of the loss of my mom, I became the lightning rod for those people who lost people dear to them, where they didn't feel like anyone else understood them. So as you speak, I immediately feel that the more, and I often call it holding space, because the amount of pain that you can hold in yourself and be at peace with and then be with someone else is creates enough space for them to kind of come towards you.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And be in their story with somebody that can hold, keep them safe. Yeah.
Well, I just feel so blessed that I'm able to do what I do, you know, yeah. And it is healing. And, you know, Simon saved my life. So yeah. It's all good. I love what I do. And one of the last shows we did was at Campostello Elementary, and 800 children were in the audience. And when they all started singing along with Simon, the windows were rattling, and, you know, the puppeteers are looking at each other going, yes, you know, so it's just marvelous. And it's such a wonderful, wonderful show, and it works, you know, that's the main thing. And it gives kids a vehicle, you know, to talk about. And the younger they are, that they can learn how to prevent it from happening, the less is going to happen to them, you know, and they're not going to have to deal with the horrible, horrible ramifications later for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We have a few questions.
Sure.
He says, I'm interested in hearing Simon's voice that appeals to children. So I don't know if you do the voice or what it would sound like, but what is the voice of Simon?
No, I don't do the voice. Norman Foote is out of Vancouver. He's like a brother to me, and he worked for Disney for many years. He's a singer-songwriter, and he did the voice of Simon, and it's not a real, you know, cartoony voice, which I kind of like, but he's awesome. And actually his daughter and son did the voices of Laurie and Doug. And then we did get professional actors to do the other voices, and it was all, you know, recorded in Canada.
Wow.
But he has a great voice.
And when you did those voiceovers, tell me, are you looking for qualities in those voices? Were you saying, oh, this is the voice that we feel like would be most appealing? Or how did you come to those?
Absolutely. We auditioned, because they had to sound like the character, you know. And I mean, my puppets have so much character. And incidentally, we have a Caucasian cast. We have an African-American cast. And we're about to translate the show into Spanish. So that no matter what neighborhood we go to, the kids can identify with their culture. That was very important to me, to be diverse.
Beautiful. Because obviously it's the child having a visceral experience that I can identify with that character. So if they can't identify with it, then you're missing the whole point, of course.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. Bolalong had a second question. The story is sad. It's a good story when we look at it, what comes out of it. Yeah. That's kind of the point of a lot of our shows, is we look at the sadness people had to work through in their lives and how they turned that into something beautiful for themselves and others. Yeah.
It's very easy to imagine you with children. Like when you first came on before we started the show, I was like, wow, she has so much love in her.
I love kids. Well, I have four of my own and I have 8 grandchildren. And three of my grandchildren are marvelous puppeteers. My own kids never wanted to be bothered with puppets. They thought I was weird, you know. And but my grandkids, when they were little, they spent a lot of time with me. And if they didn't go home with sparkles on their skin and glue in their hair, they didn't have a good enough time. So I mean, my whole life has been with children. I'm the youngest of 6, so I was born into a crowd. So it's wonderful. Another interesting story that I do want to tell you. Mm. I did the show. There was this little boy that came forward for my show, and then the mother brought him and the little brother to a show we did at a Parks and Rec, and they watched the show. The boy that came forward from my show was 7 when that happened, and he's now like 10 years old, and his little brother, like, was 6, I think, when they came to see the show. Mm-hmm. So on the way home, the mother calls me up. She said, I nearly went off the road. I said, why? Because she said, Sean said to me, Mommy, Simon told me to tell you that sometimes when I wrestle with Eric, I get tingly all over my body and I want to touch his private parts. And she was like, oh my God, that's the first time that a child has ever admitted that he was the perpetrator. But it's a learned experience, right? So, of course, right away she got Eric into therapy. And, you know, Sean has been in therapy for years. But how interesting. That was shocking to me. That was stunning, because that had never happened before.
Yeah, it was because...
But how wonderful that he was able to tell.
Yeah, because in a way, what Simon is doing is creating space to discuss the thing you don't know how to discuss. And in a child's innocence, they won't even necessarily see it as good or bad. They just don't understand the emotion. It doesn't feel right, potentially, obviously. Yeah. I had questions, too, about parents. Do parents know that their children are going to go to this before they go to it?
Yeah, we send out, the school sends out a notice inviting the parents to join their children in a production that they're having that day, and they basically tell what it is. It's a marionette show, that teaches children how to prevent sexual abuse. We don't get many parents that come and join their kids, but sometimes we do. And the parents come up to me afterwards and say, oh boy, we were really afraid of this. And, we didn't know whether we wanted our child to watch this. Mm. And then afterwards they say, you handled that in a really gentle way. And I'm glad you did. And they loved the show. And, they said, now when we go home, we'll continue the conversation, with our kids. Yeah. So, yeah, it's good.
Have you ever had an instance where the parent was there while the child was the victim?
No. No.
That would be a rough situation, I would have to think.
Yeah. And, we're starting a little podcast next month, Tough Talk Tuesdays. I'd like to call it Starting the Conversation. So having experts in the field come on so mm-hmm. that parents can listen in and know how to spot what's going on with their children. A lot of parents know what's going on and they don't do anything about it, which is horrible. So we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. Listen to your child and believe your child and act on it. Just giving them the right information is so important. And I feel good because I feel like we've saved a lot of kids. And a lot of families, because this is not just a child issue. This is a family issue. Every person in your family is involved in what happened to you one way or another.
Yeah. The one thing I see fascinating as well is that the viewership on the show is very low. And
on your show?
On this show right now as we speak.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, which isn't the problem, obviously. But what I'm conscious of is that the theme itself is if you were almost, why would I want to talk about it or know about it? And if I wasn't, why would I be interested in it?
That's the biggest problem. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Yeah. As you've spoken right now, I've begun to see, of course, if the child is shut down and you notice that they're having a hard time speaking, they would be the child that you go after,
right,
as opposed to one that was more gregarious who you thought might talk and share. When I was in grade school, the priest was molesting kids at the school. And I was one of the altar boys. And the FBI came to our house to do the whole interview process around, how nice was Father Warren to you, right?
Right.
And I found it, they shipped him off to Rome and they basically put him in another school. I mean, it really gave me, it made me really go off of any responsibility at all that they treated it that way. But the thing was that even at that time, no one at the school was told what was going on and no one was allowed to talk about what was going on. I remember my mom saying if she was to speak about it with others, they were going to whatever the, excommunicate would be too strong a word, but we would be thrown out of the school. That was the level of how far they were covering it up.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's horrible. It's horrible. There's a series called The Keepers. If you ever want to watch that, fascinating.
I watched two episodes and it was so disgusting.
Difficult.
I couldn't go any further.
Yeah. But you know what? That's reality. That's what's happening. Yeah. So it's sad.
Bola Long says, how affordable is the show for communities that are not that well to do?
Okay, I have never turned a community away ever. And the show is expensive, but we get grants, we do fundraisers, and we also have corporate sponsors, and especially in poorer neighborhoods, we'll get Burger King or Steel. And I probably this past year maybe did four or five schools where there was a payment, and we did it anyway. So yeah. I will never say no.
Yeah, well, he's in South Africa, so I don't know how easy it would be for you to say yes to that.
Well, but you know what? But he can contact us, because once we film the show, then it'll be available.
Okay.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, that is beautiful. Yeah, I still can't get my head around. You talked about the first instance where that child had the situation and then it was exposed. Like, how far do you know what transpires after you've done a show and there's this process afterwards? Like, for every show, you might have three or four instances of people that are separated from the perpetrator. Or so how do you keep track of that? Or how do you know?
We have an intern from EVMS, Eastern Virginia Medical School College. She's, you know, in the human services department, and she's actually going for her master's degree now. And so she does an evaluation afterwards, goes back to the school, talks to the school counselor. We always follow up with the police department, with Child Protective Services, and, you know, whenever they're able to let us know, they do. So that's how, you know, we know how effective we are and how many kids we're actually helping.
There must be a level of fear, maybe. I mean, I only can think of myself, like, if I had done a show that was responsible for putting someone in prison, there must be some degree of, you're the one who created this mess. Although, of course, the perpetrator was the one. So how, to what degree do you feel any sense of, like, oh, this is actually a bit scary?
Never even crossed my mind.
Wow.
Never crossed my mind.
My mind keeps going. I have like 20, you know, my dad was abusive. We talk about a lot on the show. So my mind is often predisposed to pain avoidance. You know, you're like, how do I, and since he raged so often, that's how my brain was programmed, was to figure out every way to stop anything bad from happening. That was sort of my MO. So, so when I hear your story, like, that's where all my energy goes to, is the child in me is like, wow, all that stuff that could, in my mind, not even knowing what could go wrong, but imagining what could go wrong. It just gets very alive.
Yeah, it's tough. Kids have it tough. You know, I know for me, it was awful.
You said your next step is to take this to a recording. And what would be the intention? Because on one level, the recording, how would you see that being used in a way that you can get the same or at least some sort of impact when you're not there? Like, how does that look?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'd have to make sure that that certain requirements are followed. You know, so if a school wanted to show it at an assembly, they would have to have a safety net there. And, you know, and then it's the honor system. You're hoping that they actually do that. And I want to get it to as many places, churches, rec centers, you know, wherever kids gather and be able to show the video. I don't know that I would put it on YouTube, because I would have to change it so that, you know, it doesn't encourage a child to come forward without having a
safety
soft place
net
to land. Yeah. So that was my biggest responsibility, I felt, you know, that children are taken care of right away, because it's a very hard thing to tell. So you can't ask a child to tell and then not.
Think about the lack of safety they already have. Yeah. If in coming out they become even less safe, they'll never talk about it the rest of their lives, because they'll associate it with more abandonment.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I wish my mother could have been there for me more, and that there would have been more help. We, my sisters and brothers and I, went back to Berlin maybe 6-7 years ago. And you know, we're sitting in my sister's hotel room, and she just said, you know, we never talked about what happened to you. We never talk about that. And that was the first time that we even amongst ourselves had a discussion and how everybody felt about it. So, yeah, it's weird. It's really weird.
Mm. When you talk about it just now, when I met you and I was doing the tour, I was speaking about my mom's death And I could raise it up in me again because it was such a painful memory and it was so hard that I pushed it away. How far do you see you're sort of balancing that I can allow it in and feel it against, you know what, I need to keep that aside just because I need to function in my life?
Ever since the Fox News thing and what my husband said to me, I'm okay. I can talk about it. I can talk about it. Yeah, I was kidnapped. I was held hostage for 10 days. You know, sexually abused, beaten, and offended. So here I am talking about it, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it because I think I turned talk about turning lemons into lemonade. You know, I think I just turned what happened to me around and just made a difference. And you know what? This show is so beautiful. It really is. Kids sing along. They laugh. Love Simon. So it's. I don't present it in a tragic way.
No, of course
not. You know, it's also a fun show to watch. So, yeah, it's all good.
And I'd love to, on a separate call or a separate talk about the fundraising and discuss some things to see if I might be able to find some people that might support it, because I'd love, this is the kind of activity. Anything that makes me want to go to the toilet and throw up because it's so overwhelming for me is something I want to support. And this is one of those. This is one of those things. It's true. When you shared what you did, I swear to you, I was on the phone, I think, after the session, and I called people directly and said, "You will not believe what this woman is doing." Like, that's how far, how it felt like me. You're stretching your neck out to take a really big risk, or at least what I perceived to be a risk,
right,
to serve the voiceless. It touched me in a way I can't even begin to tell you how that affected me. Just knowing that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'd love to talk to you guys again. You both are awesome, and
wish you
the best, and stay safe.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, thank you. We send you a hug.
And a kiss.
And I will talk to you. We will speak. Yes.
Okay. Auf Wiedersehen.
Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Bambos. I saw you like kind of feeling into your emotion in the middle there. Mm. How was it? How'd you go through that?
Breathing.
Yeah, you were breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was funny because what I, like when you said sense it in your own life.
Yeah.
So my sister got married.
Okay.
When shit kind of hit the fan at home, but it didn't, it wasn't as explosive.
Okay.
So for her, when she would read some of my posts, she'd be like, "It wasn't like that. It wasn't like that." And I'd be like, "Yeah, but you left."
Oh, wow. So when you were sharing
what was
going on for you,
she would get triggered because she...
And she wouldn't actually be there for you and your suffering. Instead, she was defending, for instance, your dad that wasn't there. It was that she felt
needed. She wasn't really defending, but she had another reality, another experience. So she might... How much of this was made up because of your drug addiction?
Oh, so you really didn't like when we talked about your family, not only were they uncomfortable, but I also hear that they weren't just there for you. Because I can tell you this, I'll give you the contrast. When I shared my story of how I was raised and the struggles I had with dad.
Yeah.
My brothers had a different experience.
Yeah.
But they were there for me fully, loving me, not calling my experience into question, that I felt really loved. And so when I say that to you, I'm saying you didn't receive that love. I'm saying it straight out.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you didn't get to have that, because I understand now you have to defend something as if you have to defend it.
Not defending anything.
No, I mean to the other, yeah. Right? Like how am I, you know what I always laugh at was like, these are my feelings. I'm not even saying, like, why do I have to defend a feeling, right? It's just, this is how it felt. But yeah, I'm sorry that happened. Wow. And then, see, that's the kind of thing when you'll share that story. There's a pain that I feel in me that I won't necessarily see recognized in you. Mm. And then I'll say, where is that in you? And then I see you'll go to your head and say, oh, no, because you'll analyze it sometimes. And I'll say, no, feel how it feels. And I give you the contrast. Like, no, this is what it feels like when you feel the love. Like, oh, shit, yeah, that wasn't it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can feel the pain.
Yeah.
Using my voice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, and isn't it horrible that because of the drug addiction, it's easy to then minimize your experience as if that's, oh, it was just drug addict, so you didn't remember anything anyways.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Or what?
No, nothing.
Yeah, okay, you know what I mean. It doesn't need to be literal, it's just that general feeling.
Yeah, like, I'm just receiving it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. That goes back to the talk we had 2 days ago, right?
Shut up.
No, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I quote.
Oh, nice.
Andy's been coaching me on the show.
It.
So.
It's really beautiful. So tomorrow we've got on David Boone.
Homeless teen to tech entrepreneur. He's been to Harvard and...
And he's got an incredible story.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like really intense. I mean, his, you know, even his brother was shot and killed not all that long ago. So his whole background, he was in a really rough environment and he moved out of it. But, you know, the kind of crazy thing in life is sometimes we move out of that struggle, but that struggle is still part of our lives. Yeah. So to talk to him about everything is going to be really beautiful. And we have that tomorrow on A Wonderful Chaos.
It's a wonderful chaos. We like it that way.